as well get started. Thank you all for coming. I think this is going to be a very interesting morning, a very interesting presentation. We're here today to hear from Mr. Keith Milhouse, who's a former board member at Metrolink, the commuter rail agency for Los Angeles. He's offered to come talk to us today and discuss the roles and responsibilities of a board of directors in ensuring the safety of the system that we oversee. Our board recognizes its role in the metro safety system, and we've worked to strengthen that considerably over the last few years. The meeting today gives us a chance to learn what others are doing and to perhaps glean from your experience. I think while all systems are different, there's still some commonalities, and I'm sure we can profit from this. So would you like to give some background, Mr. Milhouse, before you begin the presentation?
See if I can get this turned on. Okay. There we go.
I'm sorry. I forgot one thing. Excuse me. Mr. Lavin, you're going to give us a safety note. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. In the event of an emergency, we're going to egress to the main doors or to the emergency exit doors behind us that are illuminated by an exit sign. We'll assemble on the lawn across the street at the National Building Museum. AED devices are located behind the guard station. Fire extinguishers are also strategically placed throughout the building. The closest ones, I believe, to my left out the door. Restrooms are past the guard desk on the left. The safety contact for today is eye safety. March is Workplace Eye Safety Awareness Month, and according to the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, more than 2,000 U.S. workers sustain eye injuries a year requiring medical treatment. Approximately one-third of those injuries are treated in hospital emergency rooms, and more than 100 of these injuries result in one or more days away from work. Flying objects, tools, particles, chemicals, and harmful radiation are causes for most eye injuries. And in many cases, implementing safe work practices and utilizing appropriate personal protective equipment can prevent them entirely. Here are a few tips to help protect your eyes while on the job. Always wear the appropriate safety eyewear for your job site or role, even if you're just passing through a hazardous area. If working in an area with particles or dust, be sure to wear safety goggles with side shields to protect against airborne objects. When working with chemicals, always wear safety goggles or face shields to protect against splashing. When working around hazardous radiation caused by lasers or when performing welding activities, be sure to use special purpose safety goggles and helmets designed specifically for that task. Please remember that something as simple as putting on a pair of safety glasses can prevent serious eye injuries. These injuries are painful and sometimes lead to permanent vision loss. Thank you.
Thank you. And since this is an actual safety committee meeting, I do need to have the agenda approved. May I have a motion to approve the agenda? Seconds. And the minutes from February the 23rd, could I have a motion to approve the minutes, please? Second. Thank you. All right. Now, once again, Mr. Milhouse.
Great. Thank you. Well, I wanted to thank you, first of all, for inviting me here today. I had a chance to meet with Mike at LAIF when they were in Los Angeles last year for the American Public Transportation Association conference, and we discussed coming back and speaking to your board. At the time, we scheduled it for the legislative conference, and because Metrolink was going to have some staffers back here, but very pleased today that we also have the current chairman of the Metrolink Board of Directors, Andrew Kotyuk, and Vice Chair Brian Humphrey, who are in town for the conference. So I'm thrilled they could be here, along with Patricia Bruno, who is the chief of external affairs. What we do at Metrolink is we can't afford to pay them what they're worth, so that we give them a lot of titles. So she's had a number of them over the years. Give you a little context before we show the video. I'm the former chairman of Metrolink, having served in that capacity officially from January of 2009 through 2011. As a practical matter, I kind of became the chair on September 12, 2008. That was a Friday afternoon, and on that day, there was train 111 that left Los Angeles Union Station delivering people home, ultimately headed to Ventura County. The last two stops on the train were in Ventura County, Simi Valley and Moore Park, and was a council member from Moore Park and represented Moore Park on the County Transportation Commission and the county at the Metrolink Board of Directors. So the train left about 3:35, pulled into Chatsworth Station roughly at 4:20, and left the Chatsworth Station, headed for Simi Valley and Moore Park. At 4:22, the engineer of the Metrolink train was supposed to stop his train at a red signal and allow a Union Pacific freight train to pass on the siding. The engineer was obsessed with texting two young teens that he was planning on meeting at the end of the route to let them operate the train. Being in the locomotive at the time, there were no cameras in the locomotive, and his obsession with meeting the boys and texting them caused him to run the red signal. And the Metrolink train collided head-on with the Union Pacific freight train, both traveling at about 42 miles an hour on a blind curve. The Union Pacific operator had the chance to throw their train into emergency braking, but it did little good. 24 passengers died along with the engineer, one of the worst rail accidents in the United States history, and one that has haunted us for a very long time. Well, the NTSB determined that Metrolink did not know and had no way of knowing what was going on with that operator up there. That provided little solace, and the fact that it was a contract operator doesn't make it any better. I had a good friend on the train that was critically injured. I know a woman who lost an 18-year-old daughter in the prime of her life traveling back from the Fashion Institute of Design Merchandise, where she was a student. So at Metrolink, we embarked upon a mission to ensure that we did everything we could to make sure like something like that could never happen again. And one of the things that we talked about, in addition to all the technology, and I'll share that with you later, that we implemented and became really commuter rail leaders in the nation in safety. We were the first to have operative positive train control. We were the first to have inward-facing cameras, which got us sued by the unions in the district court and the Court of Appeals, and they lost both cases and obviously didn't appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court because cameras would have gone in nationwide, and they slowly have on a number of other lines. But one thing we were concerned about, and I think most transit boards share this, is transit boards change members over time. You have some institutional knowledge, but with elections, changing politics, just people getting tired, boards change. And I think it was Churchill that once said that those that don't remember history are doomed to repeat it. So with that, if John could run the video and then talk a little more.
Ma'am, is that a train versus another train or train versus a vehicle?
Yes, train versus another train.
We had a collision with something. We have a whole bunch of people who are now bleeding and on the floor.
Do not get close to that fire.
Friday, September 12th, 2008, 4:22 p.m. Metrolink Train 111 collides head-on with an eastbound Union Pacific Railroad freight train near Chatsworth. 25 people die, including the engineer of Train 111. Hundreds of others are injured, many of them seriously. It is the deadliest railway accident in Metrolink history.
One of the most heartbreaking sights I can remember at Chatsworth was watching them pull people's body parts out, including legs that still had the shoes tied to them. These people had gotten, they stepped on board that train and they weren't going to step off.
As a board member, safety is your number one priority. The decisions you either make or don't make can have a life-changing impact on people. People who have entrusted you with their safety and well-being. Being a member of the Metrolink board requires you to be fully engaged, committed, all in.
These people are not statistics. They're not numbers.
This is somebody's mother, somebody's dad, somebody's daughter, and I'm responsible for their safety.
The safety culture is the basis of everything we do.
Several Metrolink cars were derailed.
You can see the devastation.
Investigators are at the scene of a serious commuter train derailment in Ventura County.
Authorities say several people have been killed.
As a board member, I hope no one ever has to go through what it's like to face those family members and look at the pain that's in their eyes and their loss.
January 6, 2005. September 12, 2008. February 24, 2015. On each of these days, the clock stopped for many. Families, first responders, Metrolink employees, crash survivors.
When I saw the people with a lot of blood, I looked up, and just a huge ball of fire.
And I was yelling at him, wake up, we have to leave. There's a fire.
You can never lose sight of the abiding responsibility you have. You are a safety leader. Opting in is not an option. It is a requirement of the job. Injury-free doesn't happen by accident. It happens when safety is the primary concern and a motivator for all board members, and when active steps are taken to prevent an incident from happening.
Board members absolutely have to make a difference in safety, and they have to lead by example.
Passengers board our trains, and they expect to get to their destination safely. It is our moral obligation, it's our duty, our responsibility to live up to that obligation for them.
Our biggest challenge as Metrolink is mediocrity and complacency.
It's when people get complacent and they're not focused that accidents can occur.
You need to have safety just embedded in what you do day in and day out. It's something that is part of your DNA.
To keep employees and the public safe, you need to understand what could put their lives in danger. This means being informed and educated about Metrolink, operations, programs, and technology.
Stepping out of protocol generally results in nothing good. In a worst-case scenario, somebody might die.
During a crisis, strategic and aligned communication is key. Always follow the appropriate protocols. How and when we communicate to the public is governed by NTSB guidelines. Know the guidelines and the procedures. Never speak directly with the media outside the established communication protocols.
It was a Metrolink engineer. Is the probable cause of the accident yesterday.
Metrolink has been on journey since 2009 and has developed a stronger, more unified safety culture among employees and contractors.
After the Chatsworth incident, you learn about an emergency plan and communications. We installed the inward-facing cameras.
We went to a whole new fleet of cars and engines, frangible tables that would, upon impact with the body, would give way. The best design seats we could possibly conjure up.
Incorporating these cars with collision energy technology to absorb and protect both the crew and the passengers is cutting edge.
If it wasn't for Metrolink board members, none of that would have happened.
My 13th birthday party was being told that my dad was dead. I'm in a different place than all my friends. I mean, they're really worried about, you know, their makeup and their cute clothes, and I'm worried about my mom and how my brother's going to go to college.
Each incident you need to learn from, and you're never going to be perfect in terms of what is there, how you respond, but you want to learn from each particular one.
That's our role as the patriarchal entity we are as a board of directors.
The journey towards a safe rail system never ends. We know that safety is more than controls and the latest technology. It's the lives of the people who ride our trains, the people who work here, the communities we serve. Are you ready to start your safety journey?
Each board member, I think, needs to take the time and stand on a platform and look each direction and say, I'm responsible for their safety and I need to do everything in my power. So if you're on the board and you just phone it in, that doesn't work. People can die if you do that, and you shouldn't be on the board.
So as I was getting ready to step down from the Metrolink board, I had asked the staff to prepare something, and they did an incredible job with that video, which hopefully will be played for future boards to remind them of what can happen if you are not on top of your game. And safety is not a destination, it's a journey. And every day you have to keep in mind, and as I'm sure you're aware, of the need for that. And it comes from leadership at the top. So people identify that, gee, safety is really, really critical. Yes, we want to increase our ridership. We have budgetary issues, but we have to make sure that we get people there safely. And it was an incredibly emotional experience being there at that period of time. You know, Brian was at the scene. His other job is as an LA Fire Department captain, and you just can't appreciate the magnitude of what happened in something like that. So we wanted to share this. I shared it with Mike and Leif when they were out there, because I don't want anybody else to have to learn by going through what we went through. And like I said, even though the NTSB says, geez, there's nothing you guys could have done, we said, what are we going to do to make sure nothing like that could ever happen in the future? So, and even 8.5 years later, you know, we're 8.5 years past the Chatsworth, and I see this video, and I see that little girl whose dad died when she was 13, and it just brings tears in my eyes. So I appreciate the opportunity. If you have questions of me, questions for our current board members, we'd be happy to answer them and engage in a discussion with you. But I think the important thing is, whether it's your agency or any other agencies, as people come on board, something like this, and maybe you want to do your own video for them about instances that you've had, learning experiences, it's just important to let people know that this is a very serious job when you're operating a system and transporting people with their lives, and you have the responsibility to them and their families to make sure you get them to their destination in the morning and you get them home safely in the afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Milhouse. That was an excellent presentation. I served on the NTSB for 5 years, so some of this is very familiar to me, but I think you did an excellent job of capturing the horror of an accident. Let me ask a couple of questions, if I may. First of all, the NTSB has a very good course, which is developed for operators, airlines, buses, trains, on how to deal with a crisis like this. Have any of your people taken that course?
I don't know. Maybe Patricia would know the answer to that, but I, you know, one thing I can tell you in connection and that I learned is we've had a couple major incidents. There was an incident in January of 2005 where a deranged individual was bent on committing suicide, and he doused himself in gasoline. He had a Jeep Cherokee. He drove it parallel to the tracks and then tried to drive up on the tracks. And he ended up getting his car stuck because of the difference in height on the tracks, and then decided, he chickened out, that he was not going to commit suicide. Well, the train came through in what Brian has called aptly a perfect storm of influences. We had three tracks aligned. One track had freight trains stored on the side that had ballast to repair after a storm that we had had in Southern California, the tracks up north. The train coming southbound, and we had a train coming northbound. The southbound train hit the Jeep Cherokee. And normally, in the difference in size, it would just knock it out of the way. But because of the angle, the engine block got stuck underneath, and so it dragged the car going forward. That car then hit a switch, which threw it into the siding where all the ballast was. So 11 people ended up dying in that particular accident. And I came on board a week after that particular incident, and just kind of watched and kind of learned. But one thing that was just mind-boggling about Chatsworth was that there was no emergency plan in place. Everyone was just kind of ad-libbing and winging it. And the board was not kept informed of what was going on. So to answer your question in kind of a long-winded way, I don't know if there was training, but it hadn't been undertaken at that particular point in time. And we've worked very closely with the NTSB. I attended a safety summit with Bob Sumwalt and showed him the video, and he thought, you know, it was excellent, which is really a tribute to our staff there.
So our staff has undergone some training currently, and I think she can describe that a little bit to you, and whether that does include NTSB or not, and particularly, you know, how to handle the media. We're also going to be presenting that to the boards of our workshop. So one of our key focuses this year is going to be also focusing on this training, press discussions, responsibility for new members. But Patricia, you want to share?
Let me, before you do, well, yes, I do want to hear that. The NTSB program not only includes dealing with the media, which is very important, but also developing family assistance responses, how you help the survivors, how you help survivors' families, and this really helps when there is a crisis. Excuse me.
Yeah, I think we've had a lot of interaction with Director Sumwalt, and so he did help us hold a safety summit for our, not just our own board members, but we had it for the entire region, so all of Southern California invited boards from different parts of the counties, that five counties that we serve. And so we worked actually closely with him and Mort Downey, I think, which used to be on this board. So they both were key speakers on our safety summit. And so we worked closely with him, and we also helped. We worked with USC, and we worked on creating a common safety sort of protocols and culture with the other railroads, not just Metrolink, since we, you know, share track with UP and BNSF. We also had some curriculum created for both, and we work with USC, and USC got a grant on PTC, so we're working with them on that. But in terms of our communication, we do have a crisis communication plan. After several incidents, how staff wasn't communicating, or we weren't communicating properly to our board in a timely manner, and protocols to follow in terms of meeting, talking to the press, and that was another lesson learned from Chatsworth. There was a determination that was expressed to the media, within several hours of the incident, and that was something that was, a lesson learned from Chatsworth, that we don't want to do that. And so there's very strict protocols internally in terms of our putting together a message, working with our council, and then having it working with our chairs and making sure that we have a line of communication that is, been vetted and approved, and before we, talk to the media or make any official statements. And I think everyone, we have an incident response plan and lays out the various levels of incidents. And we also have a detailed, as I mentioned, communication plan, and everyone has a role to play. And we do, one of the roles is the family assistance program. And we are working to make sure we used to contract with someone to help us implement that, but so we're looking at how we can further expand that program. But yes, I think it was a combination of staff and I think a contractor in the past who we dealt with family assistance. Thank you.
I have more questions, but I'll give people a chance to talk first. Mr. Goldman.
Thank you. Back in the fall in Los Angeles, Leif and I were fortunate enough to meet with Keith and see this video. And I thought at the time I would like Keith and his colleagues to come back and present it to our board with two objectives in mind. The first is, since we've experienced two major accidents in the last 6 or 7 years, the Red Line crash in 2009, which resulted in a number of fatalities, and then the famous Lanfan Plaza smoke incident of 2 years, which resulted in the fatality of a lady from smoke inhalation. I thought we should see this so that we as WMATA can develop our own video along these lines, which we can use to present to the public as well as to our colleagues as to what are the responsibilities of board members in terms of a safety culture and the need to be in a position of oversight of what our general manager and our chief safety officer and the others do to carry out what is really our responsibility to ensure the safety of the system. So two things that I'd like to come out of this session is a commitment, either a recommendation of this committee to the board, that the general manager develop a similar safety video. And second, that we set aside one day a year as a kind of education course for board members, where we show our existing board members and new board members this safety video, and spend an hour or two going over what are our oversight responsibilities to make sure that we're comfortable as board members with what the general manager and the staff are doing to ensure the safety of the system. We spent a lot of time, and we spent a lot of time over the past 6 months on fare issues, budget issues, how late we should stay open, how many trains we should have, and what the time between trains should be. But I think once a year, we should sort of step back and spend a couple hours going over what are the safety obligations that we have as board members and making sure that we're comfortable that the management that we've hired to run this system is carrying out those responsibilities. So those are, I guess, my observations and what I hope we could do as a result of this presentation today.
Thank you. I would agree with Michael that that's a good idea.
I wanted to just follow up. I thought the video was very very moving and very engaging, and I think it's a fine thing to do. I also appreciated the mention of the safety summit. I wonder what other specific kinds of things that your board has done since this accident, and as Michael said, we had about the same time a similar collision accident of our own, and so can sort of understand what kind of an impact it has on you as a board member. But I wonder if, in addition to the safety summit, if there were other specific things that you had your board, and let me just give you a little bit of a context. I've been on the board since early 2011, which makes me one of the longer serving board members on a board. And after the 2009 accident, there was really, you know, as I'm sure you all know, it's very shocking as a board member to be responsible for an organization that goes through something like that. And it really sort of focuses you on safety. And that's what happened to this organization after 2009. But what happens over time is that, I mean, you cannot hold that level of attention for a long period of time. And even though there was a real focus at WMATA on safety, it sort of started to erode. I mean, we had people paying less attention to it over time. People can't stay in a situation of high alert constantly. And so even if they continue to get messages, management messages, that safety is important, after a while they start to sort of go back to old ways. And we had, you know, some of that, I think, leading up to the second incident that Michael mentioned. So what kinds of specific things do you as board members do, maybe new things that you instituted after this happened, to sort of keep the organization focused?
Let me talk about what we did in the past, and then maybe Andrew and Brian want to talk about what they're doing in the future. And you know, I'm very fortunate that I held on for a very long period of time, being so invested in there, really waiting for the right makeup of the board, because there were some board members I felt just didn't get it and understand. And now with these two, I just feel at the helm, I just feel there's great leadership at the agency, both from a staff standpoint and a director standpoint. But after Chatsworth, there was just a look at the entire agency as a whole. There were some board members that felt, gee, we didn't cause the accident. It was a Connex operator that caused the accident. So everything's fine and dandy. You know, it's not our fault. We don't have to worry about it. We brought in a peer safety review panel to look at the agency from all different aspects. And they were experts from throughout the country. We had a representative from Tri-Rail in Florida, from the MBTA. We had a public sector person involved that looked at all aspects of MetroLink. And it was done with really a twofold, a short-term and a longer-term perspective. The short-term was, is there anything that's wrong with this agency now that must immediately be fixed to ensure that there's no immediate threat to the passengers? And then secondly, what needs to be done better on a longer-term basis? So in terms of the things that were done and prepared, you know, we came up with the inward-facing cameras. And we didn't wait for the NTSB to say, gee, you should have inward-facing cameras. Our cameras were operative. We designed them, went out to bid, contracted, and installed them before the NTSB report on Chatsworth was even out. So we were very proactive. The silver cars that you noticed in there are the most technologically advanced rail cars in the country, incorporating the first-of-their-kind collision absorption technology. And easiest way of explaining it is it's akin to the change from chrome bumpers on cars to fungible, collapsible safety zones to protect passengers and crew. And then we worked on developing a training program. I mean, we also did positive train control, was first in the nation with that. We remapped the whole system to determine the best location for red lights and operations. The list goes on and on, but in terms of board member education, created an onboarding for new board members. And it's a little bit difficult because some of our board members are very ranking politicians, and so you can't necessarily tell them you have to go do this. They don't take kindly to that, but it's highly suggested, and we really put a sense of responsibility on them because, you know, if you're not engaged and you don't understand, then you're going to have to answer the consequences of that. So the onboarding program explains to them the technical aspects of how the railroad operates, talks about Metrolink operations in general, from both the running the trains to the management side of it. And then quickly on your how do you keep it fresh? That's a real challenge. And as Brian mentioned both in the video and he's spoken about many times, you know, complacency is where you start to get into problems. So they'll talk about some of the current things they're doing, but like this video, the intention was to show it, to get a visceral reaction so people that are coming on board or the people that may not have thought about it for a period of time say, wow, this can happen if we're not on top of our game. But it's always a constant challenge there. And Andrew or Brian, I don't know if you want to.
Yeah. You know, one of our positions is to make sure this is a continual discussion and that we're continually trying to improve. So much, like our past chair said, driving toward PTC. Well, we have PTC now. What's the next level of safety that we're looking at? What are those continual improvements, whether it's quiet zones that we're looking at or grade steps or, you know, continually pushing down that mission. But I'd like to take a step back. Our vice chair had an observation the day of the accident that we implemented, and it really had to do with other staff members that weren't at the scene, their feelings, the operations, their involvement. If you don't mind, can you share with them kind of your...
Well, it would be my pleasure, and I think we've really touched on how do you keep things alive, and I think words have meaning. They have tremendous meaning when they come from you, not just the outside audience, but internally. I chastise my fellow board members when they refer to these things as accidents. They're incidents. We can't get the cart before the horse. The most dangerous thing to us is not train wrecks or terrorism, but mediocrity and complacency. The most dangerous words in your property are whatever, good enough, that'll do, who will notice. And these things make our way from maintenance of way to the cars to the boardroom sometimes. Details matter. And to ask about that, the idea is to broaden the number of shoulders that are focused on safety. We can't just put it on our safety experts and those who have safety in their title, but we all have to grow. And really what that comes down to is that everybody in the organization has a responsibility in the four phases of management: preparedness, mitigation, response, and recovery. And that includes your internal audience as well. And if any of you, what I'm talking about is the people in your accounting department. They're as shaken as anybody in operations. And how often do we look beyond them? We don't realize they're upstairs in an office somewhere and they're hurting because this is part of their, they have a role to play. They can be brought out. Some things can wait as you begin to address the safety culture. Every resident's reporter, every writer's can tell you a tale. So we try to move the words that are right. We try to make sure that we don't stand for anything internally or externally. And if that addresses some of your questions. But most importantly, we have to be all ears as board members. And every incident that we've had has started off with something very small that slowly but surely got off course.
Just on a side note, too, I think us here in having these discussions with other boards in the transit industry is us trying to further that mission, not just inside our own culture, but when we're out there also, I'm hearing what other agencies are doing. So make it more of a frontline topic, whether it's at APTA or out in the industry. So it's not just inside of us ourselves, but nationally as well, and trying to take that to the next level.
And if I might add, we recognize that Metrolink is not perfect. We're not going to put ourselves out there. We have had a culture of deferral. We have had a culture of denial. We have, in many cases, obfuscated things in our own mind. And sometimes appeasement's the other thing. You can have staff members that seek to appease you, that want to please you, that want to bring you fancy, upbeat reports. And you have to stand very strongly against that. You have to stand very strongly against that. Don't just tell me the good news. You're here as board members to take the bad news and deal with it in real time. And that's the best advice I can offer. Don't allow our experience with deferral, denial, obfuscation, and appeasement to make its way into your organization. We're fighting that, and I think we're fighting it quite well.
Thank you. And Keith, thank you very much for following up on our conversation in Los Angeles. This has been extraordinarily thought-provoking for our board, and hopefully we'll commit to making a similar type of onboarding package for the rest of our board and those that come after us. I had two questions, and they relate to budget prioritization. it's obvious that you took a very comprehensive approach to safety. You cited several different programs that the board committed to, and they range from capital investments to technology and training. Can you kind of walk us through how you assessed kind of the relative urgency of some of those investments, and how did you kind of make a calculation about the relative worth of certain investments? For instance, after the Fort Totten crash in 2009, the board here made a commitment to replace the oldest rail cars in our system, the 1000 series cars, because they didn't meet the current crashworthiness standards. That was a very expensive commitment. It was the right decision to make. But I wonder, as you thought about different safety initiatives, how did you understand whether or not a $500 million capital commitment was the right thing to do relative to maybe a smaller investment in personnel or training? There's trade-offs kind of within the whole safety field. And then secondarily, were there other things non-safety related that the board had to defer in terms of service expansion or service quality or benefits to employees or things like that that were trade-offs that fundamentally could not be advanced because the safety commitment had to take precedence? So it's kind of what were the trade-offs within the safety investments, and what type of thinking did you apply to make sure that you were making the right investments within your safety program? And then secondarily, were there things that had to be delayed or foregone because those safety investments had to advance with the urgency that you put behind them?
Yeah, the timing of Chatsworth, obviously, relative to the recession, wasn't great. And that was a challenge to figure out how you pay for things like this. And what the board did was they prioritized some short-term improvements and longer-term plans that they started to implement. The rail cars that we designed in conjunction with the Volpe Safety Institute that had those crumple zones were started as a development after the Glendale incident to try to provide greater passenger protection. Glendale was the incident of the gentleman that tried to commit suicide and then chickened out and killed 11 people, who, by the way, he's serving 11 life sentences now in California. But that's always the challenge when you're on a board, is where is the money for things like this? So, you know, the cameras were $1.5 million. We figured out where in the budget that was going to come from. And yes, there were certain things that we had to delay implementing in terms of additional service or increased service. But safety was the number one priority and is the number one priority. So you have to find the money for that. Congress enacted the Rail Safety Act of 2008 after the Chatsworth crash and mandated positive train control by 2015, but provided no funding for it. So we were the poster child for the positive train control system and said we cobbled money together from every particular source, went to state, federal, local, and we were fortunate that some of our member agencies of the Joint Powers Authority have a local sales tax for transportation, so they were able to provide some additional funding there. But you really hit the nail on the head. It has to be a prioritization. You have to look to your experts and say, what can we do from an ideal wish list longer term? What do we do on a short term standpoint and basis? And you guys probably want to add a few things on that.
I probably can. I think one of the big things was to tell our own story. As we went to the five counties in the JPA and asked for investments, we had to have an open kimono concept there. We had to, warts and all, you had to see what things were wrong at Metrolink. And it wasn't always easy. But when we told our own story, we helped control the narrative, and we got the positive investments. Like everyone else here at the the meeting here for APTA, we're focusing on our challenge of a state of good repair, and our railroad infrastructure is facing challenges. And we are, won't say it's been perfect, but we have had to make some difficult choices And I think that they've been in the right place. We really have to look at value, not just a cost. And we have to decide what our personal values are. And we've had some fair share of internal, very hot, heated internal debates about this. But at the end of the day, when our heads hit the pillow, we sleep well. And that's the best thing that I can wish for any board member, even if they have to curtail service or not fulfill the dreams of some others, is that when their head hits the pillow that night, they can sleep well knowing they've done the right thing for each and every passenger and crew member.
Yeah, and I think one thing to think about also is, and this may not apply to you, I'm not familiar with, if you have any above ground systems, obviously ours are, and even though we might have funding or budgetary approval to move forward with a project like a quiet zone, three crossings to improve and make that safer, the double and the gates and so forth, it requires the local municipality to really embrace that and adopt it and take that responsibility and approve doing it. So even if we want to move forward, if that local city, Glendale, did not approve it, move forward with it, our hands were tied too. So a lot, just recently, we just had a ribbon cutting where just now, 7 years later, 8 years later, we finally have that area where the gentleman who tried to commit suicide was at. Now they can't drive on that right away, the MOW, because it's a quiet zone, it's gated off, but it took years to work with that city council and the local elected that they were comfortable to take on that litigation responsibility and to craft their verbiage where their council, legal counsel, and themselves felt comfortable saying, we adopt this and can move forward with it. So I think, while you're looking at budgetary items, it's also, who controls that and what other entities, government entities, you need to work with to approve those regions. And sometimes it takes more time than your mere, sometimes you get money before those things fall into place. So.
Thank you. Ms. Hudgens.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. I wanted to comment because, as Ms. Forda indicated, being around and hearing and being part of what has happened here at Metro for so long, it's really interesting as I listen to you, and I really think the video is a very good piece. I think it's when and how you use that video and what you're going to do with it. And one of the questions I asked is, I thought about is, for a long time, we were always a committee of the whole. That's the way we did all of our work. And then there was a thought of efficiency that we thought we'd get to, so we started parceling it off. And so as I looked at it is that comprehensively, finance, safety, all of those things are the responsibility for every board member, not a particular expert of one in the other, but all and the way you collectively do that, I think it helps focus us. I think now and think that absent that committee of the whole in safety, because it's just a few people that we perceive need to take care of that, I think it takes away from that. But more importantly, I think the opportunity to have to reflect upon what you experienced is the part, too, that it's good to have in that room to be able to bring that. We had good leadership when Mort was here because he was the hands-on all for that. But it was to really invest that in all of us to have that sense of what safety meant. When you have to talk to the family of a child of the employee who has been injured on the job because of the lack of safety, or with the family, it changes the way you look at what you do, and it does speak to what the priorities are. We still have the 1,000-car series here, and it's kind of question why we still have them. But if you can't commit to a capital program, you're not going to get there. And so I think there are ways of setting priorities individually, but collectively part of it is the most important part we do here. And I would really like to have you comment on your structure of how you actually have those discussions as a board.
Director Hudgens raises a really good point and something we had done at Metrolink. I don't know how often your committees meet or your board meets. At Metrolink, we had two meetings a month, and originally they were set up as committee meetings on one Friday and a board meeting on the other Friday. And at some point, we recognized, wait a second, our safety committee is meeting, it was called operations, I think, at the time. So we had operations, what was the other one? I'm drawing a blank. Operations and executive management and legislative. So we had, and then we, it was like, wait, the safety committee is getting all this information that really the whole board needs to hear. You know, everybody on the board needs to be versed in that. So we went to two board meetings a month. And staff would do more of the preparation in bringing the items to the board. And if it was necessary to develop an ad hoc committee for a certain project, we would do it that way. But this way, the entire board would hear everything from the safety committee and vice versa. If it was a legislative matter, the entire board would hear it so they could make an informed decision. Because there's something askew if you have only half your board getting the detailed reports on safety when the entire board should potentially be hearing. And that was a determination that our board made. Now, some people were of the mindset, well, gee, that's, you know, problematic if we have to show up twice a month. And sometimes on the committee meetings, they wouldn't show up to the committee meetings. An alternate would show up in their place. And we have there was a little bit of a funny structure at MetroLink because we had 11 board members, and then each board member could theoretically have an alternate that was there for them as well. And that provides some issues because we had some sitting board members who liked the title of, gee, I'm a MetroLink board member, but they would show up four times a year, and their alternates would be there the other times, and there was just a lack of communication between the alternate and the board member. Now, at the time, Brian was my alternate, and so we talked on a regular basis. That wasn't a problem, but the structure, when you set it up like that, just allows for the potential of people not being educated or in communication with what's going on, and when you don't have that discussion, that education, that's where you can get into problems there.
If I could add something there, there's also a need for personal courage as board members to say, I don't know. It's really hard to look at somebody and say, I've been here so many years, I just don't know what this is. And then to be cautious of staff members who say, well, you know, they tuck the thumb in the waistband, well, you know, we can't deal with that. Well, you know, we don't. Don't accept that. Ask why seven times until you get to the very bottom of the answer. And lastly, again, don't put safety as somebody's title and make them responsible. The safety plans, the moment you put them on the shelf, they begin to decay. You have to get them back off the shelf. And don't allow staff to regurgitate the same plan, copy and paste, you know, swap the page numbers. You just can't allow that. We see that in systems across the country. Really take a fresh look at it as often as possible and make it happen.
Director Hutchins, I really do appreciate your comments. You know, I think you hit the nail on the head with, you know, board responsibility. And in an organization, we're the last man standing when anything happens and any answers are provided, right? And that's called fiduciary responsibility. And attached to that, it requires due diligence of everything, whether it's finance or safety on those pieces. And it's utmost when you're on the board that you understand that, whether it's a financial issue or problem or audit or lost funds, that you know where, why, or what's going to happen to fix it. And the same thing with safety. And the same thing with personnel or where the program is going. And as a board member, if they don't have that, they should be in that seat. I mean, there should be an expectation and a standard that's set that they are engaged and they do understand that responsibility. Now, sometimes when you're elected or you're appointed, you know, it doesn't feel so much as, you know, a public entity that's for profit or something along those lines. But, you know, you're actually very much spot on. I appreciate you making that statement.
Thank you. You know, I enjoyed the video very much. It's a very moving to see these accidents and understand how tragic they are. I know that with MetroLink, you know, you did have a tragic accident and were basically very responsive to it. And a lot of the part that MetroLink has done is they've influenced others in their organization, in their communities, and also other companies. When I talked to Union Pacific and Burlington Northern Santa Fe about how they're going to roll out positive train control, they all say, well, the Los Angeles Basin is first because we promised the guys at MetroLink that we were going to get it there first, you know, and we're going to change the rest of the schedule, but we're not going to bump Los Angeles from that first piece. But I think I really enjoyed Ms. Hudgens' comments, and I think it is telling. We are somewhat in a transition here at Washington Metro. We've had safety issues, but again, we have discussions about whether or not to close the system early on some nights in order to have time to do maintenance and other safety issues. Our general manager, Mr. Wiedefeld, seems to be making the right decisions for safety, but I think there's room for improvement with the board members to begin to look at the different things that we do and understand that everything that we do, whether it's financial, whether it's different programs, all have to do with safety in this organization. I know that we have some good leadership. I know that safety is certainly a priority of the board, but as Ms. Hudgens said, we have a very limited number of people on the safety committee, but everybody is part of the finance committee. So I think that would be an area that we might want to look at to change to make sure that safety is part of it, because it's part of every decision we make here as far as developing a safety culture. And I think we need to finish building the top level of the organization. We have Mr. Lavin, who is certainly an advocate of safety culture, but he's got a tough job to do, because we've got thousands and thousands of people here that need to have that same attitude. And it's got to start from Mr. Wiedefeld, Mr. Lavin, from the board members, and it needs to drive down to make sure that our track inspections are completed properly, that our operators think about safety first and everything else. And it's a big job, but I congratulate MetroLink for taking the bull by the horns and making sure that everybody knows the importance and actually walking in the shoes of the people that are affected by these tragic accidents. Thank you for being here.
If I could just, if we're finishing up, leave my colleagues with something that happened this morning. As I was on the train coming here, as you know, we're anticipating some weather coming in later today, and the operator on the train that I was on was, announcing things and was mentioning that, there was going to likely be some weather and that would have some impact on train service, and obviously anticipating this is not what people wanted to hear, he emphasized, in his announcement to the passengers, he said, safety is most important. Safety is more important than service. We have a safety culture here at Metro. And, I was really pleased to hear that.
Just one more thought, just to follow up on what Catherine was saying. As you go through your annual exercises on safety, do you have a safety plan that your board reviews annually, just like a budget, which attempts to identify what are your goals for the coming year, or what are your big concerns, big deficiencies, and how you plan to go about achieving those goals in the next 12 months? How do you handle that on a regular annual cycle?
Yeah, if you want to add to it, you can. So we established several years ago following this incident a short-term and a long-term strategic plan, right, which is for the whole system. And of course, a key component of that is safety. So each year to go to our workshop, we revisit what goals did we meet, which ones do maybe we want to update or take off or add in, and where are we going for the next year, right, or extending. So it's part of our annual process, and it's enveloped inside of our whole operations. We're talking about budget, we're talking about safety, we're taking operations, supply. It's part of that core conversation each year.
And there is a system safety plan at the agency that is in place and is reviewed annually and then adopted by the board. I think it's semi-annually, but it sets forth specific safety plans, parameters, things that need to be accomplished and done. And it's a good reminder at the annual workshop. And some people after the Chatsworth incident were of the mindset, well, gee, maybe we shouldn't have a director's workshop. It might look like, bad if we're at a hotel spending some time in the day conferencing. And I understand the perception of, gee, this might be considered a junket. I mean, it was all local, so it wasn't the case. But it's important to spend that time because everybody on the board is so busy. I mean, you're on the board not because you do nothing during the course of your day. You're respected professionals within your industry, your area, the community. It's hard to make time for everybody to get together, but that was just so critical to spend that time, do the annual workshop, and spend an inordinate amount of time talking about safety and having those discussions. And one of the things that came that I was thinking about as we were having this discussion here is after Chatsworth, it was tough to be a MetroLink board member or employee. And you couldn't complain about the fact because there were people that suffered much greater losses, you know, family members, loss of life. But, you know, you didn't want to walk around and people ask you where you worked and our staff, you know, yeah, work at MetroLink, oh, you're this and that. And it's just a very poor perception. I think you guys have experienced some things and, you know, hey, we're in the spotlight, so you can get beat up by media, public perception, and relations, but it's important at that point in time to be a cheerleader for your agency, and that doesn't mean ignoring blemishes that need to be addressed and fixed, but you've got to inspire your people because the last thing you want is somebody coming into their job depressed, not liking their job, not being on top of their game and losing focus, and you have a great system. You have the opportunity to take people in, get them out of their cars, alleviate traffic. You're doing a wonderful public service. And, yeah, there are challenges, but you got a great system, great people, and that's what we had at MetroLink. And I was a big cheerleader, as these guys were, for our system because we were going to make our system great. And, yeah, we didn't cause that accident, but that wasn't the point. The point was it was our name on the train, and we're going to do everything to make sure it could never happen again. So that's why we wanted to be the best, the industry leader, and we push people for that. And the new people that come on board, they're energetic. They have an excitement because they see the leadership in this agency. And the people that were there that stuck it out with us, we went to them and said thank you and let them know that they were important to the overall success of the agency. So now it's a nice thing to be a board member or to work at MetroLink. And I'm not on the board anymore, but these guys, they're enjoying the spoils of that because they put in hard work on this as well. It was really a team effort. And as Brian said, now, you know, we can put our head on the pillow and sleep at night. I feel comfortable that I've passed the agency into very good hands. But I'll tell you, there were nights, my house, I could hear the trains. And during the time period after Chatsworth, those couple years till we could get some of that safety improvements in, I hear a train whistle and I wake up at night in a cold sweat because I just felt this huge responsibility. And, you know, gosh, after that whistle, it was like I can hear the crash of metal or something like that. But now, you know, I can sleep at night knowing that it's in good hands, knowing that this board, the staff have done a great job. And it doesn't mean you rest on your laurels because, as Brian said, you know, you get complacent. That's when you get into trouble.
Could I just follow up with our chief safety officer? We have a system safety plan, and I think you mentioned to us that we have an obligation under a new FTA rule or regulation to actually, as a board, approve that plan at some time in the future.
Yeah, I think the last time it was approved was probably like in 14. What we're doing is a few months back I brought in the FTA to give you the SMS presentation. I've drafted that. It has to go around internally. Once we're satisfied with it, I'll present it to Carol, and if Carol's comfortable, we'll present it to the board. And it's the policy statement that we're going to follow SMS guidelines going forward.
And what would your timeline be on that? Sometime in the next few months? Or
yeah, probably within
spring.
The next month I'll send it to Carol, probably within the next 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Carmody. Chris Condorcy, I'm sorry I wasn't here for the video part of the presentation. You know, one of the challenges I think we face here, and it's not to say that we've mastered the challenges at the board level, but while I think there is an increased focus on safety,
the same sense of problems.
Sure, and hopefully you guys will jump in here and add that as well. One of the things after our incidents was we held a safety summit, and we brought the entire agency in one day on a Saturday. Everybody came in. We brought in food and the like, and we just had an open and frank discussion. You know, it was not we brought people in. I didn't want to say it wasn't open to the public because that wasn't true, because obviously we have public meeting requirements. But everybody came together, and there was just the ability for everybody to have a frank discussion and let the people know that we're all invested in this. And one thing of our staff, I think there was a perception they felt unappreciated or their voices weren't being heard. So it was important to reach out to them and say, you know, look, everybody wears the MetroLink badge. Everybody has the MetroLink uniform. We're all in this together. And soliciting ideas from them, asking them, what are your concerns? What do you see? We set up a hotline where people could report things without fear of repercussion of what they were reporting, because we don't want people to think, gee, if you say something, there's going to be some backlash against you if we don't like what it is you're saying. So you have to make it safe for people to open up. You have to let them know that their opinions are important, that they're of value to the agency, and by having these annual type meetings, summits, letting them know from a standpoint of safety that everybody is invested. And sometimes, as Brian had pointed out, you don't see, if you're in the accounting department, how your role fits in necessarily with the day-to-day operations. So one of the keys is making sure that every employee is either asked or you share with them how their decision and what they do every day ultimately can impact the bottom line. Maybe you guys want to throw some.
That question is definitely a thought-provoking to me, and I'm sure there's some items to add. But on something like this, with that question, the first thing popped in my head is, why don't we have a video like this for the employees to watch? I mean, just your thought right there just popped in my head of, you know, we're focused on the board, focused on our level. We have a safety plan. We have steps that we take. But what other engagement can we take? And something like this, employee-based, would be ideal because they're in that situation too. They're coworkers. How do they deal with it? Joe that we see at lunch table now, right now, he's in the hospital, whatever it may be. So I think there are improvements that we can walk away from, and I appreciate that comment. That makes me kind of digest that a little bit. But as to what we do today, we do implement it from top down. I think we try to set that example for what's seen and include our department heads, our directors, and try to focus it down inside. But we also use our media and our marketing side to track comments that are made in the public. Have our feelers out there with what are people seeing, how are they feeling, of our employees when they ride the train, whether it's tweeting or Instagram or Facebook, whatever it is. We're trying to be very receptive and receive that criticism. I mean, we don't like it, but, we need to embrace that. So I think as much as we're trying to put it down there, we also need to have receptors of how is it being perceived and how is that going out there, and then look for improvements. And you just gave me a great idea, so thank you for that. If you have something to add.
Well, I can only add that I think some of the cultural feedback that I get is when I catch employees doing things right, I have time to spend. I stay near the right of way. I see signal maintainers working. I follow them to the subway. They don't know who they have. I'm undercover boss. They have no idea who I am. They'll buy their sandwiches before I can get in there, but I will get them a gift card, put my card with it, whatever it says. Thanks. I caught you doing things great. Thanks for doing what you did. That buzz, the $25 it cost me for that gift card, gave me $1 million because the buzz on the system is we're being watched. They're catching us doing the right thing. And so helping people do this, helping the car cleaners, middle of the night, we were having storm delivering pizzas out there and helping them clean the cars during the night, spending 20, 30 minutes, got a great deal of respect and much cleaner restrooms and cars. We as board members can find unique. Well, you're not going to do that every night, but every once in a while, get out there on the system, catch the people doing things right. Let them know that they're being watched. And most importantly, follow up on every compliment to the same degree you every complaint. When there's a complaint against the system, there is a formal procedure to go through, and you go to painstaking detail. We know you do. We all do. Are we doing the same thing with the compliments we get? I don't think so. We need to completely take those apart. What is touching our patrons? What is it really? Is it the things we think it is? I don't believe so. And I think there's a need for us to really get a broader scope of how we're interacting with our customers and our staff. I saw an employee today when one of your information booths cleaning their workspace, and they seemed to be taking great pride in that workspace. Now, they could just treat it, but they actually were taking. And I said, there's some pride there. Now, maybe another kind of pride that you and I think about, but for them, that was central. And I said, if that can grow, we have to find ways to make that happen. So little things, and they grow into bigger initiatives.
And I'm expecting Brian to go back to that station and take a subway car before he leaves town.
You know, I'd like to add one thing. The vice chair was talking, made me think about our staff brought a concept of, having the white collar work with the blue collar, right? Oftentimes we get stuck in the boardroom. We don't embrace, we don't go in the field. We don't go to the different stations or behind the scenes. So we just held our budget workshop at our maintenance yard, right? So this year what we did is the staff organized for us to go out. Everybody went to, we planned for a day to go down to the maintenance yard. We used their break room. And we realized that we were making them uncomfortable, so we had catered lunch to them in a separate area and gave them a good lunch to receive us well instead of us imposing on them and kind of make them feel like we're pushing them out. And then we had them set up different stations about safety or their improvements that they're working on. And we went off, broke up into groups, went around, and they talked about the wearable tracks or, the new engine or the maintenance that kind of walked us through, able to describe to us, but it created that dialogue between us and them and that connection, and where we were able to show our support, they could show pride in what they were doing, and it was very well received on that point. And I think we need to do more of that, to that point of embracing them, being a part of that, versus us upstairs and them downstairs, embracing what they're doing.
And our operations center is located out in Pomona. We have a dispatch center. There is the maintenance, as they talked about, the central maintenance facility. But occasionally, I think it's once a year, we have an employee recognition event. We have a holiday event out there and bring in lunch and the like. And, it's the people, the boots on the ground that are out there that come to that event, that are working on things. But you don't see that many board members there. And I always made it a point, and Brian I know has come on a number of times out there, but some of our other board members wouldn't engage and come out there. And when you show up, and getting to Pomona from where I am is about a two-hour drive. I mean, our system covers 512 miles of track, five counties, it's huge. But when you show up there, that tells those people that you think they're important and you value them as employees. And when they feel valued, they're going to go that extra mile. They want to make your system great because they're proud to be a part of it. And it's just so important to recognize that. And I just can't say enough about that.
Well, thank you. This has been a very valuable exchange of ideas. And I think returning to our goal of being better informed and sensitive board members to safety issues, I have an interest, as I think do others, in being sure that we not only have a good orientation for board members, but a continuing education to keep them sensitized to safety issues and safety needs. With that in mind, I will suggest to my colleagues that we should make this a subject of discussion at our upcoming retreat, see what kinds of things we can do to keep ourselves interested, informed, and up to speed on this. And you've certainly been helpful in providing a groundwork for that. And I'll be working with Mr. Lavin on some ideas as well. My thanks to all of you, Keith, everyone. It was an excellent presentation. On behalf of all of us, thanks for giving us the time.